Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Read the same two verses we read this morning, verses 14 and 15. For some time now, we've, for the most part, probably 99% of the time, been preaching from the same verse Sunday morning and Sunday evening. It reminds me of time when I was in Chicago and a man came up to me and he said, "Do you realize that's the third time that you've preached from that verse this year?" I said, "Yep, it's been three different messages too." It doesn't have to be the same message just because it's from the same verse. But in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 14 and 15, "For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. And that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him which died for them and rose again." Again, as we said this morning, leading up to these verses, beginning with chapter 4, Paul makes several statements concerning the life that he lived for the Lord. In summation of those statements in chapter 5 and verse 13, he said, "For whether we be beside ourselves," that means whether you think we've lost our minds, "it is to God, or whether we be sober," that is normal, "it is for your cause." He's saying, regardless of man's opinion of us, our life is lived for God. No matter what man thinks, if man thinks we're out of our mind, doesn't matter. Has no bearing. And then our text, of course, provides the reason, the motivation of the life that Paul lived. And that opening word "for" in verse 14 simply means because, or for this reason. And the main part of the reason follows, which is the love of Christ. And he goes on to view the love of Christ in the context of the cross. And it was this realization and awareness that out of love, Jesus Christ went to the cross for him, that motivated Paul to live the life that he lived. And that fact began to shape Paul's thoughts, Paul's perspective concerning life. So we want to look at that again this evening. The subject is the love of Christ, viewed from the aspect of the cross. Consider Christ's love and the cross. In our text, as we pointed out this morning, three times there is reference to Christ dying. He said in verse 14, "One died," speaking of Christ. He said in verse 15, "He died." And then he said in verse 15 again, "Him which died." Again, the subject of the verse is the love of Christ. So those three statements about death have to be viewed in relation to the subject, which is the love of Christ. So the setting of the subject, the love of Christ, the setting is death. His death, or the cross. We see Christ's love in his coming to die. And we mentioned this morning. Before the foundation of the world, a people were given to Jesus Christ of the Father And he gave these people to Christ to save. And notice in John chapter 6, Jesus declares this. John chapter 6, and we're going to look at more verses than we normally do in a message, but John chapter 6, verse 37, Jesus said, "All that the Father giveth me shall come to me. And him that cometh to me," that would be those that were given to him, "I will in no wise cast out." What a promise. "For I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me." What will is he talking about? Well, it tells us. "And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day." He also, in John 17, makes reference to these people given to him. He refers to them in John 17, 2, 6, 9, 11, 12, and 24. He refers to a people given to him of the Father. So these people were given to him to save and to keep as well. Christ loved these people. And this love moved him to leave the glories of heaven and to come to this earth in a body of human flesh. We read in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 14, and let's turn over there. "For as much then as the children," for as much then as the children. With that in mind, who's he talking about? Well, notice verse 13. "And again, I will put my trust in him, and again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me." So the children he's talking about are the ones referred to in verse 13, the children that were given to Jesus Christ. So we come to Hebrews 2, verse 14, "For as much then as the children," those given to Christ, "are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same," that is flesh and blood. Who did he do that for? The children that were given to him, that he referred to in John 6 and John 17. That he would take a body of human flesh upon himself is an act of condescension. It's a voluntary act. But we must never ever forget it was an act prompted by love. The design and purpose of Jesus coming to earth in a body of human flesh was to redeem a people, the people given to him. Notice Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. "But when the fullness of the time was come," God's time frame, "God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law." Why did he do that? To redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. So Jesus Christ loved these people, and he was sent of God to redeem those people. So Jesus Christ, in that body of human flesh, was God. Nothing less. He was God. And as such, he was omniscient. He was all-knowing. God did not surrender his attributes. He did not cease to be God in becoming flesh. So being God, he fully knew and he fully understood what he had come for and what that would involve. He knew all of that. And according to Matthew 1 and verse 21, he came to save his people. And he knew everything that that involved. The salvation of his people. And out of love, he voluntarily and willingly submitted to everything that involved the salvation of his people. Christ understood he's God. Christ understood, he fully comprehended the purpose of his coming in a body of human flesh. Jesus never on this earth said, "What am I here for?" He knew. And you hear him in Matthew 20, verse 28. He said, "The Son of Man," speaking of himself, "came not to be ministered unto, but to minister." And then it says, "and to give his life a ransom for many." The Son of God, man, came to give his life. Now that's much more than saying the Son of Man came to die. That's true, he did. But it's much more than that. He came to give his life. That's a voluntary death. And that was for the ransom of a people. We hear him in John 10, verse 11. "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life." Giveth his life. And in John 10, verse 15 and 17, he says, "I laid down my life." And in John 10, verse 18, he says, "I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again." That is, I have authority from who? God the Father. I have authority from God the Father to come and to lay down my life. So in all of those verses that we just referred to, he speaks of laying down his life. He not only came to die, he knew he came to die, but he came to lay down his life willingly. In other words, he wanted to die. He wanted to lay down his life. That's why he came. He wanted to lay down his life for me. That's the love of Christ. He wanted to lay down his life. They didn't kill him. No man took his life from him. No man had that power. No man had that ability. He's God. So he laid it down. That's love. Christ understood and fully comprehended that he came to die for and in place of others. Again, Matthew 20, verse 28. "The Son of Man came to give his life a ransom for." Now, if there's a ransom, it's got to be for something or somebody. for many. He came to give His life. That is voluntary. And He came to give His life a ransom, that is, a payment. Laying down His life would be a payment. It would be a price. And it is an exchange. It's an exchange. The purpose is to bring about release and deliverance. A ransom for. Again, hear Him in John 10, verse 11. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth His life for the sheep. For the sheep. So He laid down His life, but He laid down His life in behalf of, in the place of, the sheep. In John 10, verse 15, He said, I lay down my life for the sheep. And as we saw this morning, three times in our text referring to His death, once in verse 14, twice in verse 15, it is He died for. It doesn't just say He died, period. He died for. That speaks of the nature of His death. Christ knew that His death was substitutionary. He knew that He came to die in the place instead of others. Christ knew that His death was sacrificial. That is, it was an offering unto God. It was an offering, not unto us, but unto God. Therefore, it's an offering that must be accepted by God. His death was an offering. It was sacrificial. Christ knew that His death was penal. And by that, we simply mean that it was a satisfaction to God's justice. He knew that laying down His life would be satisfactory. It would be an accepted offering by God. Therefore, it is called in Romans 3:25 and 1 John 2:2 a propitiation. A propitiation is that which placates, that which pleases. Jesus Christ, because of love, came voluntarily and willingly to die a sacrificial and penal death in the behalf of those given to Him of the Father. All the love of Christ. Christ understood, He fully comprehended that His death would be one of crucifixion. He knew that. He didn't just know that I'm going to die, that I'm going to die in the place and in the stead of others. He knew that His death would be a crucifixion. We hear Him in John 3 and verse 14. He says, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son must be lifted up. Now there's some commentators out there that in their ignorance say Christ must be lifted up in the sight of the people. That's not what that verse is saying. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. It's talking about crucifixion. In John chapter 8 and verse 28, then said Jesus unto them, when ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am. Notice in John chapter 12, if there's any doubt that this lifting up refers to the crucifixion, John 12 makes it clear. John chapter 12, verse 32 and verse 33. Jesus speaking, "If I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." This he said, signifying what death he should die. He's talking about the cross. He's talking about the crucifixion. So Christ came to die. He came to lay down his life. And he knew that death would involve crucifixion. Now, crucifixion is or was the death of punishment. It was a death of punishment. It was a death for criminals. So Jesus Christ came to be punished for me. He came to be punished for me. Oh, the love of Christ. Crucifixion was the death, again, of a criminal. He came to take the place of criminal, to be treated as a criminal for me. Crucifixion was the death of unimaginable suffering, torture, and misery. And he came to die that death in my place. Crucifixion was a death of humility and dignity and disgrace. And he knew everything about it. He's God. And he came to die such for me. The Bible also reveals that Jesus Christ was very much aware of the details of his death. Notice in Matthew chapter 16, he's talking to the disciples. In Matthew 16, verse 21, "From that time forth began Jesus to show, to explain, to reveal unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem." Why? And suffer. He's explaining that to him. He knew all about it. "Many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day." He knew all about the betrayal of Judas Iscariot. Notice in John chapter 13, John chapter 13, he knew all this when he came. John 13, verse 18. "I speak not of you all." He's talking to the 12. "I know whom I have chosen, but that the scripture may be fulfilled, he that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me." And he would go on to describe how Judas would betray him. He also was fully aware that the apostles would scatter and leave him. Notice John chapter 16, verse 32, he says, "Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own." And notice what he says, "and shall leave me alone." He knew that. And yet he came. Oh, the love of Christ. He was left alone. He came voluntarily and willingly to die a sacrificial and penal death of crucifixion for and in behalf of those given to him of the Father. Oh, the love of Christ. Those are precious words. love of Christ. Christ, and we've preached on this, had an eager anticipation as he viewed the crucifixion. That also magnifies and manifests his love for us. The crucifixion is referred to in John 7, verse 30, and John 8, verse 20, as his hour. His hour. No man could lay hands on him, for his hour was not yet come. They tried to kill him many times. They tried to stone him. But it was impossible. Simple reason, for his hour was not yet come. And then in John 13 and verse 1, we read, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, he knew it was time. And though the apostles, as you read John 13 through 16, the apostles were filled with gloom and fear. As you read those chapters, it's very obvious from what he said to them, he wasn't afraid. He knew this is why he came. He wasn't afraid to lay down his life. He wanted to lay down his life. He wanted to lay down his life for me. And then after you read John 13, 1, for he knew that his hour was come, he spoke words of encouragement to them. And then in John 14, or John 14, verse 31, he continued to speak words, and they would leave the upper room, Jesus and the apostles. And he continued to speak words of encouragement to them. Why was he speaking words of encouragement? Because they were discouraged. But he wasn't. His hour was come. But he wasn't discouraged. They were filled with dread. He wasn't. He never dreaded going to the cross for me. He knew that's what he came for. Oh, the love of Christ. So he encourages them in John 15 and 16, and then in John 17, verse 1. John 17 records the prayer of Christ. There's no fear in that prayer. I mean, you can look long and hard. It's not there. In John 17 and verse 1, it says, he lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour is come. Now, do you think that he said, oh, Father, the hour is come? No, read what it says. The hour has come. Glorify thy Son. Wasn't said in dread. Wasn't said in fear. And then you read John chapter 17. And we hear and we see the tone and the attitude of eager anticipation. To die. To lay down his life. Those given to him. And he did so out of love for me. And then after he prayed that prayer, he voluntarily and willingly entered into a place called Gethsemane. The most mysterious places in the Word of God to many. And it was there in Gethsemane that he came under the attack of Satan. The attack was so strong that Jesus Christ was at the point, or near the point, of death. And he says to Peter, James, and John in Matthew 26, verse 38, he said, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. I'm under attack and I'm about to die physically, is what Jesus is saying. And he prayed three times. Matthew 26, verse 39, 42, and 44. Lord, let this cup pass from me. And well over 90% of commentators, and pretty near 100% of people that preach from this verse, says he's praying that somehow, some way, God would deliver him from the cross. Do you really, honestly believe that foolishness? That's not what he's praying for. There are several problems with that theory. First of all, it denies the person of Christ. Denies everything he knows. But did he escape the cross? No. So if he's praying to escape the cross, and God didn't answer that prayer, and yet my Bible says he answers all the prayers of Christ, because Christ always prays in what? The Father's will. You mean to tell me that Jesus Christ prayed outside of the will of God? If so, then he's not God. And if he's not God, he's not powerful enough to save your soul. I mean, it's serious. It's pretty serious. I know a lot of people say, well, it really doesn't matter. Well, I'm sorry, but it really does. He was not looking to avoid the cross. Turn over to Matthew 26. He was praying, I believe, that his life would be spared so that he could go to the cross. That's what he came for. And notice, after he prayed there in verse 44, let this cup pass from me. That was the third time. Then notice what it says in verse 45. Does this sound like someone trying to avoid the cross? Then, that is after he prayed this for the third time, cometh he to his disciples and said unto them, sleep on now, take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand. Talking about his death. And the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. It doesn't sound like dread to me. That doesn't sound like somebody trying to get out of going to the cross. God had answered his prayer. God spared his life in that garden. And now Christ says, rise, let us get going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. I see excitement in those words. I don't see dread. Oh, the love of Christ that said, rise, let us be going. And he knew where he was going. He was about to be arrested. And he did all of this with me on his mind. Every bit of it. Jesus came close to dying in Gethsemane. But he couldn't, because his hour was not yet come. And when he says, Lord, let this cup pass from me, the Lord answered that prayer. He delivered him from Gethsemane. It's like he prayed, Lord, I can't die here. I've got to go to the cross for Dan Gordon. I can't die here. And the Lord answered that prayer. And then he said, rise, let us go forth. The betrayer is at hand. This love of Christ, you read in John 18, after what you read in Matthew 26, 45, and 46, that's where you would fit in John 18, verses 3 through 9. And you remember Judas Iscariot came with his band of men, and Jesus said, whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Does it say Jesus ran and hid? No, it said, I am. Here I am. And they fell backward because he revealed himself. And then he allowed himself to be arrested Why? Because he loved me. Because of the love of Christ. And it is this love that is a motivation for life. Paul said, for the love of Christ constraineth us. You see, people serve the Lord with some terrible motivations to do so. They will serve the Lord, well, if I do this, I'm going to get a crown. Well, that's not going to motivate you a whole lot. It really isn't. Well, if I don't do this, I'm going to be punished. You'll get over that also. These are things people use to motivate. Well, the church tells me I should do this. Mom and Dad tell me to do this, so I'll do that. That won't last long either as a motivator. But here's a motivator. Christ loved me. And he came and he laid down his life for me. If that doesn't motivate you, you don't have it. It's as simple as that. The love of Christ constraineth us. It's what motivates us. It's what moves us. He loved me. It's what inspires us. It's what stimulates us. Pushes us, if you will. And sometimes we need to be pushed. And just the thought, he loved me. That should be enough to push us, to propel us, to drive us, if you will. He's saying that the love of Christ that moved Christ to lay down his life for him, that love is a force in my life. It's a force in my life. And was this love of Christ that caused him to conclude, caused him to come to this conclusion, life is all about him, not ourselves. That'll bring you to that conclusion. I can't sit down and convince you that life should not be about yourself, but it should be all about him. But there's one thing that ought to convince you of that, and that is the love of Christ. And if that doesn't convince you of that, there's nothing I can say, there's nothing I can do to convince you. If the love of Christ does not convince us, we have to question whether or not we have ever really experienced this love of Christ. And here's what this love of Christ does. We read in 1 John 4, verse 19, we love him because he first loved us. It causes us to love him. I don't believe anybody will faithfully serve the Lord continually without loving the Lord. Don't believe it. You have to love the Lord. But our love for the Lord has its basis in the love of Christ. The more we think about his love for us, the more we love him. And the more we love him, the more we want to serve him. So his love, he loves me, needs to grip our hearts, needs to define and shape our lives. Nothing else will do. The love of Christ. How wonderful. The love of Christ. Those are four precious words. And it is his love for us. We ought to thank him every day for just loving us. I mean, we can thank God, and we ought to. We can thank God for a lot of things that he gives us. And again, we ought to. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't forget to just thank him for loving your soul. Lord, thank you. for loving me. That's something we ought to be grateful for every single day. Because it's made a difference in our life, it's made a difference in our eternity. The love of Christ. May it grip our hearts. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song.